Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
Never filtered, always fun.
There's a lot of support for Travis Dermott.
Well, because he's fun.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me of, you've seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Yeah.
So he reminds me of Spicoli.
Yeah,
like,
he does.
He looks like him, he talks like him.
All I hear is some tasty waves, cool buzz, and I'm fine.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Noodles in Pittsburgh tonight calling Sens Pens. And Pittsburgh's one of the hottest teams in the league, and all of a sudden they put themselves back in a position where you might have to consider them the favorites in the Eastern Conference. We're so focused on the Atlantic Division because the Leafs aren't going to end up with that top spot in their division, so they're either going to play Boston or Tampa in the first round, and then more than likely Boston or Tampa in the second round if they get there. But you look at the Metro Division, I'm not ranking any of these teams ahead of Pitt. Like, I know it's very difficult to win 3 years in a row. We hadn't seen 2 years in a row in 20 years.
But they look like they're gearing up.
That's exactly what it looks like. Like, since the new year, they're one of the hottest teams in the league. They get the best power play in the league. Matt Murray's healthy and rolling.
Want me to give you some stats? Sidney Crosby, 24 points last 15 games. Yevgeny Malkin, 21 goals in his last 24 games. And their penalty kill, which 2 months ago was 19th, is now 5th. They just add a depth defenseman and call up a couple kids, and away they go.
Every year they do this. For the past three, anyway. So in that division, they're favored over Washington. Definitely favored over Philly or Jersey or Carolina. Like, it's Washington and Pitt. Those are the only two teams that scare me in that division, if you were to play them. And Washington doesn't really terrify me because of their playoff history, and I think they're a worse team this year than they were last year or the previous few years. And the Leafs pushed them to the brink last year, and I think the Leafs are a better team this year anyway. So how many teams really scare you in the East? Tampa, Boston, Pittsburgh would all be favored over Toronto. Outside of that, you feel real good about where Toronto's at. If they can stay healthy and keep improving, and we know the defensive play's got to get better, and if they can maybe chip away at that, maybe improve up the middle, third or fourth line center.
When you say favorite, though, I think you're talking like you would expect one team to win, but I don't think there's any one team where you're like, this could be an absolute gong show.
No, it's not an impossibility.
No, it's not like Golden State and basketball where it's like...
No. Not even close to that.
It's who's going to get goaltending, who's going to get hot at the right time.
Exactly. And that's the way the NHL playoffs has kind of always been. Like, yeah, the past 2 years, you felt good about Pitt. Felt very good about Pittsburgh. But at no point were you going into it thinking, oh, it's a lock, Pittsburgh's winning this. At no point over the past 2 years was Pittsburgh a lock to win the Stanley Cup. At no point. Even before the Stanley Cup finals began, it was not a lock.
I think Nashville might have been favored last year, weren't they?
The way they had been playing, like, they had kind of steamrolled through the first three rounds, and they were really good down the stretch.
They lost Johansson. That hurt them.
Yeah. But it was, yeah, I would say it was probably a coin flip. Like, I guess Pittsburgh had home ice, so from that standpoint, maybe you lean towards Pittsburgh a little bit, but that's the beauty of the NHL playoffs, and the Leafs are playing really well right now. They've won 8 of 9, and they've got two very good lines that are connecting. Their defense is healthier now than it has been all year. Freddie Anderson continues to play great. Babcock's a really good coach. You know he's going to game plan well and have them positioned properly to pounce once they get there. I feel better about the Leafs every day. And we said this off the top, and it may be recency bias. It almost lines up perfectly for that. But I think they might feel more comfortable in a series against Tampa than they would Boston, just because of the style of play that Tampa plays. Fast, skilled, not overly physical. You can find some room out there. Guys like Marner and Nylander and Matthews would feel comfortable. And it would be who gives you better goaltending and which team wins the special team battles.
For the longest time, even with Boston's hot streak, I'm like, really? Are they that good? But I've talked to a couple of coaches, and they give them props. Like, they are the real deal. The Boston Bruins are the real deal. So if you think they're just on a heater and they've got kind of good chemistry, they are the real deal.
Well, they might catch Tampa. Like, based on points percentages, they're right there. Like, there's still so much time left in the season.
Not that much time, man. You're talking 25 games.
I know, but 25, that's more than a quarter of the season left.
If you know it flies by, though. You get to the trade deadline, and then it's a sprint, and then the playoffs, and you never know what can happen.
There's enough to cool down, though.
Oh, there's no question.
Boston's on this run, and it's like a 25-game run.
I'm sure what Boston is hoping is this heater dissipates. Good word.
Very good word. Yep,
heater
good
dissipates,
word.
And then they fire it back up for the playoffs.
Almost. You're right. Like, from a superstitious standpoint,
this can't go on forever. Let's slow it down here a little bit. Or in your head, you're probably thinking that anyway.
Well, they lost to Buffalo at home on Saturday. And at that point, I'm thinking, okay, they're going into New Jersey the next day. They're going to lose to Jersey. And here we go. Boston's going to lose four or five in a row. And then we're going to know it's Toronto-Boston in the first round. The dust will settle. They'll get through the trade deadline, and we'll see where it goes. But then they beat Jersey. And now they got Calgary in town tonight, and Mike Smith is injured, so he's not going to play. So you got to think Boston's probably going to win this one. Who knows? I would think they'll slow down, but no guarantees. All right, Pierre LeBrun might join us in studio later in the hour. Bobby Mack will be in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. But Noodles was calling the game last night, and he's been off the past couple of days. He's down in Pitt calling the game tonight, and we figured we'd call him up, see what's going on. Here's Jamie Noodles McLennan. What's happening, Noodles?
Not much. How are you guys doing?
We're loving life.
Yeah, we've had some great takes today. I generally don't pat myself on the back, but
I'm sure the guns have been blazing today on the takes. But
what do you make of this take? Because are you on the same page as Mio when it comes to the idea of the Leafs feeling more comfortable in a series against Tampa over Boston?
Maybe, but it's recency bias, though, because they just came off that game last night with not a lot of physicality. They ultimately won. They caught a goaltender that had an off night. So for recency bias alone, I would say yes.
Okay, so that's one of our takes today. How do you feel about that?
Okay. Well, I mean, watching the game that close up and personal, the one thing that was on display last night that you can't deny is both teams are ultra-skilled. So that's the one thing. Yeah, O mentioned, I didn't think Vasilevsky was very good last night, but that's going to happen in a seven-game series. He's not going to have his best every night, as will Frederik Andersen. So, you know, you can maybe wash the goaltenders out. My only concern last night, and I've been talking about it too, Victor Hedman didn't really find the score sheet as far as the back of the net, but I thought he had four or five, like, dangerous plays where he's a guy that is a threat to be reckoned with, and that's the only separating, I guess, situation. And that's nothing against the Maple Leafs. I thought their D played well. I thought Morgan Rielly was outstanding, and their crew really held up against a team that really pushed. Like Tampa, you could see that. I didn't think Kucherov and Stamkos had their best, but that, you know, may be a factor that the Leafs slowed them down and they had to deal with Matthews' line and Kadri's line. But I still think it's a coin flip when it comes to Boston. And recency bias, I would prefer Boston, put it that way. Just maybe I'm not trying to be the contrarian here. I just think that there's something about Boston that the Leafs would have maybe something to prove with. And you're going to have Tampa at some point if you get past Boston, in my mind. So I still would prefer the Bruins slightly, and not just because the Leafs won last night. They looked good. It's just I think they match up better against the Bruins.
Well, it's subject to change between now and the middle of April. I just look at the way the two teams play. I mean, Tampa and the Leafs are very similar. Like, they're really skilled. They're looking for kind of a wide-open game. They're not overly physical. You look at Boston, and it's not like this is 1980s hockey, but they do have Chara and McQuaid and Backes and Bergeron's a bigger presence than, you know, any of the centers in Tampa, and specifically a guy like Marchand, where you know you get him in a seven-game playoff, he is going to be an agitator, and he's going to target players, and he's going to piss players off. Tampa just doesn't really supply that. And that doesn't mean that style can't win in the playoffs. It can, and it will. And the Leafs will be more than likely underdogs with either team. I just wonder from a comfort level, from a wide-open ice standpoint, guys like Marner and Nylander would feel more comfortable against Tampa than they would against Boston.
I think you're right on that standpoint. I'll give you an example. Nylander's goal last night, where the second goal, where Matthews can actually get hit by Stamkos down the wall. Now, Matthews makes a great play to the middle, but Stamkos doesn't even finish his check. Whereas, you know, if we're talking about the Boston Bruins, you're right, no matter what, Matthews makes that great play off the wall, but he's going to absorb a hit if that's Chara pinching down, or if that's Marchand, or like you mentioned, some of the guys who are more physical. So maybe that's something that wears them down, or maybe makes them think a little bit different of the way they have to play. So yeah, you bring up a great point as far as the physicality, because, you know, Matthews made that little pop play to the middle, and Stamkos kind of stopped on the play instead of running through the body, which I thought was a bit weird, because, you know, I know the game's not as physical anymore, but you still hear coaches wanting to slow down top players. You got to get at least a little bit of a little piece of them, and he didn't even try. It was almost like he stopped at the last second. And that, you know, Matthews deserves a lot of credit for avoiding that check and just popping it to the middle. But I thought in a playoff series, it'll be a little bit more physical on that point.
Noodles over the phone. He's down there in Pittsburgh calling the Sens-Pens game tonight.
Anybody else that, you know, people don't get to stand ice level, Jamie, to watch the Leafs? Anybody else kind of stand out? Marner, I don't think he really had his best game last night, but what stood out for you where you were like, wow?
I really liked Morgan Riley's pace. There was a play in the third period where he poke-checked the puck on, I'm trying to remember who, I think it was Paquette driving hard to the net. It was a left-handed shot. And instead of, you know, trying to run him into the boards or maybe hooking and holding him, he kept his feet moving and he poked it wide. And we had it queued up for the replay and we never got to it, but it was just an outstanding play where, you know, a guy like that, I think we always talk about the bottom end a lot, and we argue and yell and scream about, you know, Polak being in the lineup or this guy is a match, or, but we forget sometimes that Morgan's having a really good season and how well he skates and how much ice time he absorbs. I thought he looked really sharp on a couple plays last night, up close and personal. You may mention that Marner and that line was quiet, but I thought they generated something as far as momentum for Matthews' line, because they were, before Matthews and fed it to Nylander for that first goal, Marner and his line hemmed Tampa in their own end and got a couple chances. And then it was the next shift that the top line came out and scored. So they may not have got on the score sheet as much as they wanted to last night, but I thought that they did a good job of kind of tiring out Tampa and pushing them back and pushing that pace up. So that was impressive for me. A guy like Marlowe, and he's a steady player. And at ice level, you can see how smart some of these guys are at handling the puck and kind of getting out of the way of the physicality of it, just getting on their horse and getting going. And, you know, Tyler Bozak's interesting for me because he's such a funny guy. Like, you know, he leans over before the game and I said, "Don't worry, Tyler, I'm going to say good things about you." And he's like, "Oh yeah," like he's laughing it up, having a good time. Like, you know, and I thought that goal where JVR scored, he made a good play down the wall. So It was nice to see those guys have a little success. And they, you forget sometimes their kids having fun out there, and it was really neat to see from bench level.
What about that scenario you're going into tonight? One team is a absolute dumpster fire, and the other one is picking up steam here in the East.
Well, I mean, you're right. Like, and Pittsburgh has beat Ottawa the last 8 times at home. So I was looking at some of the stats today. It does not look good from a Senator's standpoint, because Pittsburgh's starting to feel it, and our buddy old Uncle Phil is on fire. I was looking at the stats since January 1st. Crosby, Malkin, and Phil are the most point getters in the league. Phil is fourth, but Crosby and Malkin are 1 and 2, respectively. So this could get ugly early if Ottawa doesn't play very well, because they play fast in this building, and they can make something happen.
Speaking of ugly, what kind of blood pressure rating do you think your boy Joel Quenneville is pulling in these days?
There probably is a chimney of cigars being smoked.
They got smoked last night. Like, they lost 6-1 in Arizona.
That's when you kind of know the wheels are...
Yeah, it's over. That's it. They're not getting back in the race. They are done.
Yeah, and it's funny because I saw, I don't know if you guys saw Mark Lazaris on Twitter a couple of days ago defending and saying, hey, like, you know, you've had your run, Chicago, like, don't kick guys in the nuts on the way down here. Like, basically, and I kind of almost wanted to bring it back to a Toronto narrative because, you know, the fan base is easily, and you know what, you live in the now, and Chicago's not playing well, and there's some guys that are having good seasons, so they want to move them out or get rid of this, and turnover just doesn't happen overnight. But he's also saying, hey, stop and smell the roses here. You had 3 cups in 6 years, so don't be greedy about it, and don't be disrespectful, because the guys that you're not loving right now are the guys who helped deliver the cup. So it was an interesting rant, and to see people chime in on it, there were fans that said, we have the right to be upset no matter what. And then there were other people saying, you know, good points, because we've had a good run here, and we'll allow them to clean house and to do what they need to do to kind of try and get back into contention. So you kind of saw both sides of the fence. But right now, I would imagine old Joel's blood pressure is a little high, and he'll probably be a little bit cranky.
He's probably doing work on the ponies. You got to find out what's up at the Kentucky Derby this year, because he's going to be in attendance in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, you won't miss that. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Noodles. Enjoy. You're back tomorrow, right?
I am. I'm excited because I'm actually calling, which will be the greatest game called on Thursday. It's Ottawa-Buffalo, and I'm pretty sure people will be tuning into that one.
I can't
mail that in. If you're going to Buffalo the night before, I would get so tanked and just mail that in.
Steve Kerr,
I'm not even sure
game.
Arlene McLennan will watch that one.
No,
my mom. So.
I don't think so either. Good luck with that.
Either way. All right, guys. We'll see you in the morning.
All right, man. We'll see you tomorrow. There's Jamie Noodles McLennan on Overdrive. His own show brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca. Ottawa, Buffalo on Thursday night.
The dumpster bowl.
Yeah, I would Steve Kerr the whole game. Not even show up. I'll tell you what, though, that Chicago situation, I'm glad he brought up Mark Lazaris, who's a Hawks beat reporter and has been for years. If you missed it, jump on Twitter. He went on a bit of a diatribe a couple of days ago because he said, yeah, they're not playing well. They're losing. They're likely not making the playoffs. But I guess there's been like a lot of vitriol and hatred towards the core players. Like Jonathan Toews is getting hated on. He's not playing well, relatively speaking. He's still okay, but he's supposed to be great.
And they're looking into the future. If you're playing like this right now on year two of...
Might be year three. Year two or three of a $10.5 million per year over 8 contract. Like, he's got at least 5 years left at 10.5. And Seabrook's got, what, 6 or 7 years left at 8?
That situation is going to get really ugly. And Jonathan Toews is still... When you're Jonathan Toews, you'll always get people saying things like this. He's going to be okay, but maybe he's not.
He's got to be better than okay, though, for $10.5 million. Like, that's the thing. You have to be one of the top 10 players in the world if you're going to be paid like a top 10 player in the world. You have to.
Well, I'm pretty sure Kobe Bryant said to the Lakers, I've given you all these championships, and he wasn't very good at the time. Pay me.
Well, Jeter did the same thing at the end of his career.
Yeah.
And
look what I brought here. Pay me.
Mm-hmm. But I don't remember people in L.A. turning on Kobe. Maybe turning on the contract and the situation, and that's fine. But actually hating on a guy like Jonathan Toews? Hating on Quenneville, hating on Seabrook and Keith. They gave you 3 cups in 6 years and 2 more conference final runs. 5 times over like 9 years, they went to the conference final, and 3 of those, they won a Stanley Cup. Like, I understand if you're disappointed with where the team's at, but how do you hate on an icon like that? I can't picture myself in that situation, because that situation would be so foreign to me as a Toronto sports fan. Like impossibly foreign.
Don't kid yourself. If they won three cups here, they would have forgotten about it too and been hating on anybody.
You think so? You think in 10 years, if Matthews is playing the role that Taves is currently playing, you would have Leaf? Well, yeah, you're probably right. There'd be some people that would hate on him. Some people that would constantly be hating on
him. Because it's not just Taves. There's a lot of different factors.
Keith is taking it. Seabrook's taking it.
Yeah, they're probably saying, Q, we've had enough of you. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Seabrook, Duncan, Keith, you guys stink now.
Well, listen, Belichick's taking heat in New England because he didn't play Malcolm Butler. Guy's won 5 Super Bowls, been to 8.
He should be taking heat for that.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, individual situations, by all means. Nothing wrong with saying that the Hawks are disappointing you as a fan. I would feel the same way. I wouldn't be happy with the Taves contract. I would be horrified with the Seabrook contract, but that's not his fault. Yell and scream at Stan Bowman, the GM. Don't blame the player for signing the deal. Like, we talked about Phaneuf yesterday and how that $7 million per over the next 3 is still hanging over. That's not on him. The Maple Leafs gave it to him, and he signed it, and Ottawa knew exactly what they were getting when they took it on. Yell and scream at Dave Nonis, retrospectively, or Brian Murray and Pierre Dorion and the Sens. Don't yell at Dion Phaneuf for the contract. He just signed it. They gave him the money. Yell at him for the play. Yell at him and scream at him because he's not performing up to the way you believe he can. But
you didn't put a gun to anybody's head and force him to give him that money.
No, that's not the way it works.
You found out about this guy in Cali yet?
No, we're still trying to get to the bottom of it. If you missed it, I mean, I guess it broke earlier this afternoon. The firefighter who's from Toronto that. He went on his annual ski trip to Lake Placid and disappeared last Wednesday. He's been found in Sacramento, California. And we need to connect some dots here. How do you go down the hill and then just disappear and show up almost a week later in California?
Poof.
How do you go up in smoke and end up in California?
I know. Like, you go to the bottom of the hill, throw your skis on the rack, and then a cab's waiting, and then you're at the...
It must have, because if he drove down, or he went down with friends, so maybe he didn't have a car down there, but if he did, the first thing you do would be like, all right, let's go check if his car is still in the parking lot, or back at the chalet.
I'm just saying, if it's a big, because you know skiing, there's cliffs, and you're always going to have the excuse where it's like, you know, nobody makes it down there, like Rambo.
Exactly. And especially at a place like Lake Placid, like the Olympics were there. It's a massive, massive ski hill.
Like, he went off a cliff, and God knows what happened to him. The wolves got him.
I'm almost surprised they were still searching for him. Like, I guess you're trying to find his remains and everything, but there's no way anyone thought he was still alive. How could you think after 6 days of searching in freezing cold weather, when he's disappeared without a shred of evidence?
Well, I think I know you pretty well. If I went skiing or snowboarding with you and I didn't hear from you in 2 hours, because you're like, where are you in the lobby? I'm in the lobby. If I didn't hear from you in 2 hours, I'd be like, you're gone.
Like I'm dead.
Or and I'm just gone. I don't know where the hell you are, but I'm assuming you're gone.
Okay, if I called you.
Because I don't see you as the type of person that shows up in California.
No, and that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, does he have a medical history? Does he have, I don't know, like a disorder where he just blacked out and ended up in California? But even if that's the case, how do you get across the country? Jump on a bird? I don't know.
Well, if you rented a car, somebody would have had documentation of that being registered.
Yeah. Unless there's a buddy who was in on it. I don't know.
Well, we're going to find out.
We have to find out. Like, I need to know.
Well, no, we're
going
to find out whether we want to or not, because it's going to come out.
Well, I guess someone sent me a tweet earlier. Like, he ended up in California and he got access to his cell phone and he called his wife, who was not on the trip. She was still in Toronto. But I'm assuming she was actually down in Lake Placid. She answered, and then he's like, I'm in Sacramento.
Well, if he's up to no good, it's his ex-wife.
Well, from a cynical standpoint, let's be honest, we're all thinking the same thing.
He had a manti teo out there.
Some elaborate plan. I'm going to go down the hill, see you later, I'm gone. And now I got to find a way to ease back into the situation. Almost like that Seinfeld where Costanza leaves the damaged car and Steinbrenner thinks he's dead, and he's got to come up with some ridiculous excuse as to why he's still alive. Like, I almost feel like that's maybe what happened. This guy's been in California the past 3 days, like, uh-oh, I can't believe everyone's searching
for me. Okay, why are you still alive, but what the hell are you doing out there as the follow-up?
I know. Like, I'm so happy you're alive, but how did you get to California? What are you doing?
Let's just hope everything turns off for this cat.
I don't know, man. We're tracking this. This is way more interesting than anything else going on. Bob McKenzie will join us in studio in the 6 p.m. hour. We'll get into the Olympics, what's been happening over in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Canada off to a pretty good start. Medal count's been pretty good. Every morning I wake up, I'm like, there's another bronze, gold.
It's about time.
Loving it. Feeling very patriotic.
Because you know in the Summer Olympics, we get feathers.
Yeah, we generally don't get to talk about a lot of success.
Me and you might as well go do an event.
We'll talk about which event we would least like to be a part of.
And which one, if we trained, we think we would have a shot at.
All right, we'll get to that. And apparently big news out of Tiger Woods' world that I'm calling fake news on.
What, he's got a new 3-wood in the bag?
Yeah, we'll tell you about that as well. And who he's paired up with this weekend. I know you'll be watching.
That threesome I would love to see.
On fire. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day on Friday, calling with the names of all five players, and you can win a pair of lower bowl tickets to see Toronto take on the Islanders on February 22nd down at the ACC. And the theme this week, former Leafs who were teammates of Garth Algar Snow, our favorite GM. Garth Algar Snow. Today's Leafs lineup player of the day is Jason Blake. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZephyrEpic.com. Did you play with Jason Blake?
He showed up the year I left. It was another great Fergler signing, wasn't it?
That one didn't really work out so well. As if we couldn't see that coming. He had 46 goals or something the year before, a contract year. And then Ferguson gave him like a 5-year, $5 million deal, I think it was. Didn't they buy him out? I can't remember what happened with him.
I think I told you I saw the Fergler in Buffalo. I go into breakfast, and there's one guy at breakfast, the Fergler. God, did I avoid him like the plague.
He's not your biggest fan, though, either, right?
No. He's aware, and I'm aware. Apparently, people are trying to give him all these props for what Boston's doing.
He's their assistant GM, though, right? He's been there for a while.
Okay.
He deserves some sort of credit, doesn't
Unless he? Unless you give me a list of what the Fergler's done or certain players he's brought in, I won't believe it.
So who gets credit in Boston? Only Don Sweeney? Cam Neely? That's it?
I think Don Sweeney gets some credit. The players themselves get credit. Bergeron, Marchand, Tuukka Rask, Zdeno Chara.
All right. I'm with you. The players deserve the majority of the credit all the time.
You don't know what the Fergler has done there either.
I have no idea what he's done.
Exactly. So until someone shows me what he's done or influenced...
So... Do you give Kyle Dubas any credit for the Maple Leafs' success? I don't really know what he's doing behind the scenes. I know he's overseeing the Marlies, but I don't know what that means.
I got to be honest with you. I don't know what Kyle does. With Lou coming in, I don't know what he's been relegated to do. But I'm sure he deserves some credit.
I would think so.
Yeah. I'm sure Mark Hunter deserves a lot of credit.
See, Hunter, I feel like we know more because he's in charge of scouting and, by all accounts, drafting. Like, he's got the final say on who they're going to draft. So, he decided, we got to take Mitch Marner. He didn't have to think that long, but he took Austin Matthews after Patrick over Patrick Laine. He drafted Dermott. He was involved in other kids coming up. Probably the Kessel trade, I would think, where he was like Kapanen. If he was, I'm not sure he was here for that. I think he was. Kapanen's a guy we're going to want.
Zaitsev.
Yeah, Zaitsev. Zach Hyman. Who they acquired because he wasn't going to sign in Florida, and the Leafs picked him up, and Hyman's been a good piece. I'll give John Ferguson Jr. some credit. I don't know where it's supposed to be allocated, but I'll give him some credit. Fergie's been reporting this throughout the day. So, what is it? The Genesis Open this weekend? It's at Riviera. And Tiger's going to be paired with Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy.
There will be nobody else on the golf course. No one, unless Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, and Phil are in another group.
I don't even think that's going to cut it.
No, but there will be no one on that golf course.
Because McIlroy hasn't been playing a lot recently either. So you got McIlroy, you got Tiger, but did you hear Tiger? Like, we were kind of joking about it earlier. I guess he's brought back some old shaft on his driver, and this is big news because
he knows how it feels.
Yeah, and he won at some other course.
No, he hit it good at the Wyndham, he said.
At the Wyndham, he hit much better with this shaft on his driver. So it's supposed
to
mean something.
It's one of the most fascinating things in sports. Like, you know how ESPN does that sports science? How could a guy that just goes on the driving range and stripes drivers down the middle get to the course and not be able to hit a fairway? Like, is that just nerves? How could it be nerves when he hits unreal shots? This guy can't keep it on the planet. Basically never has been able to.
It's got to be a mental block. Like, it has to be something about live play compared to the range. I mean, there's a lot of guys on the range, practice players, right? Like, you put me in practice, I am Bobby Orr in practice.
But this guy blows a 3-wood, 300 yards. So doesn't the caddy want to say, dude, enough with the driver? But it's such a power game now that they think they have to whip it out and hit it.
I think they have to, though, don't they? They have to.
Dude, I know where you're going with that one, but that was just, they want to just peel out that driver and smash it all. They call it smash and gouge, where they're just like, well, I don't care where this goes. I'm smashing it.
But look who the best players in the world are.
Dude, I know. Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson's the number one ranked player in the world. I think he still is. He hits the ball 450
Jordan
yards.
He's the only guy that plays on tour that's any kind of strategist who thinks about shots, how to play holes. Everyone else is just mash it and gouge it.
Well, maybe that's what we need to see out of Tiger Woods.
Can he become a strategist?
Why not? Well, if you're the greatest player of all time, you would think that you have those capabilities.
Like that. He won a major like that. The British Open. He didn't hit a driver all week. He was hitting 2 irons and won the golf tournament. Do you remember that tournament? It was just after his father passed away, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Tough to remember major wins by him, though. It's been almost a decade.
I know. I just remember that one British Open where he did not touch his, like, a wood. It was
but
just
that's
two
the
iron,
open,
two iron, two iron.
The Open's always like that, though, with the fescue and the wind. And the way the course is set up, it's Lynx Golf. They just play it differently. Sean tweeting and saying, John Ferguson Jr. should get complete credit for Boston's success, foreshadowing when he traded Tuukka Rask for Andrew Raycroft. Yeah, I guess he does deserve credit for that.
Yeah, he knew he was going to go there the whole time, so he shipped him there.
What a brilliant move. Here's Tuukka Rask for Andrew Raycroft, and I'm going to benefit from that in 10 years.
Yeah, when I quit.
when I get fired
and
when
then
I get shown the door. What a brilliant move. And I guess Jason Blake, yeah, he was traded with Vesa Toskala to Anaheim for J.S. Chiguer.
God, he disappeared, man. He had that 40-goal season, cashed in. He scored a few goals here, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He scored. Like, he was a goal scorer. He's a skill guy, speed guy. His contract, there was too much focus on it. He was still a good player. He wasn't a complete disappointment. But he was amped up to be, you know, this next wave, the guy who was going to get them back to the playoffs to be a part of that. And when a team loses, people turn on you, man. We were just talking about that with Chicago earlier. If you lose, fans will turn on you. All right, Bob McKenzie will join us into the 6 p.m. hour. We got to get back into this Steve Kerr Golden State Warriors conversation that we had in the 4 p.m. hour. We got
garbage.
So much response from that.
Garbage.
About Kerr just saying, I'm not coaching in the fourth quarter, and he allowed his own players. Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, running out onto the floor with the clipboard, like taking over timeouts, calling plays.
See, I think that's embarrassing. They didn't even know what the hell they were doing. Well, you think they were really drawing up plays?
They know what they're doing. You could call plays. You could call a power play unit.
By the way, the NBA timeout is such a production, and it is just the guys that aren't playing are looking all over the crowd, and it is such a production.
I love it.
Toe touches on the court, stretching, couple calf stretches, and then just eyeballing everywhere.
Well, it's such an intimate viewing experience, and the same thing applies with the players. You're so close to the crowd.
Dude, I was on that floor at one time. It was a rink, but I know what they were looking for.
Oh, I know exactly what they were looking for, or what they were looking at.
Every timeout, just a massive...
That would have to be difficult to play through. Wouldn't it be like if you had a superstar courtside, like you're out there, you're playing, and Rihanna's sitting there courtside. Like, how could you not pay attention to that? How would that not be distracting? Kate Upton walks in.
Pat Sajak was always front row in L.A. But
yeah, but Pat Sajak doesn't move the needle. Like,
no.
Who cares? If Vanna White showed up in her prime, yeah. But Pat Sajak isn't going to cut it. But if you're playing, you're up big in the fourth quarter, some SI model walks in.
Well, would you be rattled if you were in warm-up and, like, Rihanna gave you the phone number to the ear and said, call me?
Yeah, that would be rattling. I'd be like, okay, how do I get your number? Like, how's this going to work? Anyway.
When I was in Hartford, I sent my number to a hot-looking girl. She sent it back and said, I want Jeff Sanderson's.
No way.
Yeah, it was a total stiff job.
Yikes. That hurts the confidence.
Yeah. She basically settled on me later.
Oh, so it worked out.
Came back around.
There you go.
I circled back.
Once Jeff Sanderson said no guy?
Yes guy.
Persistence. I like it. Bob McKenzie in studio on the 6 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. All right, Bob McKenzie in studio on the 6 p.m. hour. Alex Goff, Canadian Olympian, will join us live from South Korea around 6:40. Get back into the Leaf win last night. Raptors in action tonight with Miami in town. But right before the show, we were reading about this Toronto firefighter who went missing in Lake Placid last week, and he showed up in Sacramento, California earlier today. And I can't stop thinking about it. Like, this is all I want to do is find out more news on this. How do you go down a ski hill and then go up and smoke and show up a week later in Sacramento? And all these firefighters from Toronto were down there in Lake Placid helping out. You had state police involved. His family would have been terrified, friends. And I guess he got access to a cell phone earlier today. He called his wife and said, I'm in California. What's up? What's happening?
Let's get to the bottom of this.
We got to get to the bottom of this. We need to go to the professionals here because you and I, we have no idea what we're talking about. Here's Janice Golding from CTV News. Hi, Janice. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. So, okay, tell us, can you break down the details of today? Like, what should we know about this story? Because this is a serious turn of events.
Okay, well, what I can tell you is that Toronto firefighters were on the hill today searching for him. There were about 80 on the hill today. About 100 traveled to Lake Placid over the weekend to try to assist in the search. At 1:45 this afternoon, they were told he had been located, so the search was called off. Now, what we are told happened is that Captain Danny Filipidis contacted his wife. He made contact with her. He called her a pet name so she was able to recognize him, and then they lost contact. But he eventually called her back, and they told him to call 911, so he was located near Sacramento, California. Apparently, at the time, he was confused. He wasn't able to give direct answers. The police that eventually made contact with him were concerned, and so they brought him in for medical attention.
Based on your impression, based on who you're talking to, did anyone think he was still alive?
Well, at this point, it had been 5.5 days. People were giving up hope because if he was on the mountain, he would have spent night after night without food, without shelter, and in extremely cold temperatures. The conditions were very, very bad. There was a lot of snow, so people were losing hope. So, of course, the Toronto Professional Firefighters Association is saying that they're very, very happy with the outcome that he's been found alive. However, no one seems to know how he ended up in Sacramento. There are still a lot of questions. In fact, when he showed up in California, when they found him, he still had his heavy snow jacket on, his ski pants were on, and I'm also told his helmet and goggles were with him as well.
No
way. It's not that big of a hill, is it, where you can go down it and end up in Sacramento? How does this guy just walk off the hill?
How do you walk around for 6 days with a helmet and goggles on in California, too?
You can't board a plane like that.
Right, and heavy snow pants.
So, obviously, they say he was dazed and confused. No one knows exactly what happened. You know, a lot of questions, a lot of people speculating maybe he had a head injury, maybe he hitchhiked. No one knows. They say he did not take an airplane there, though. That we do know for certain.
Wow. So what do you think the next step is here from the city's perspective? Because were they spending taxpayers' money to send the firefighters down to Lake Placid?
This is where you talk about the brotherhood. They say that these men were and women were volunteering their time. They were switching shifts with their brethren. And they traveled to Lake Placid. I know, in fact, a friend of mine was one of them, and he hopped in a car at 2 a.m. on Sunday and drove there so they could start the search at 7 a.m. on Monday. Some of them were staying in hotel rooms. A friend of mine found a hotel room for $50. Others were being put up by people in Lake Placid. So it sounds like a lot of people were working together. This was a huge search. You've got to understand there were 140 people out on the hills, forest rangers, state police officers, members of Homeland Security, areas patrols, as well as our fire officials. They had the helicopters out. They also had the police dogs out searching.
So there's no kind of people whispering or talking about any kind of weird behavior. This guy was just a straight-laced fireman.
We asked if he had mental health issues, and they say he has no history of mental health issues.
Wow. There's still a lot of dots to be connected. We're looking forward to seeing where this goes and your reporting continuing. Thank you for doing this, Janice.
Back to you in the studio.
Yeah, back to you on the wherever you are, Janice. Thank you for this.
Yes, okay. Thanks, guys.
There's Janice Golding from CTV News.
This guy was up to no good.
It's quite the plan if he pulled it off, though. If he didn't get on a plane, he's still walking around with a helmet and goggles on.
Dude, do you know how long that is? I used to drive a lot. From Lake Placid to Sacramento in a car?
That's going to take you 2 days.
2 days? That's 4 days.
Yeah, probably.
That's 4 days.
Four days.
If you drive the whole way straight.
Right. And if you're hitchhiking, how could nobody pick up on this guy? I don't know, man. This is such a strange story. Captain Danny Filipidis.
We are going to talk to Janice tomorrow again.
Yeah, we need Janice Golding and that kind of reporting on this program.
She is our Lake Placid sideline reporter.
Insider. On assignment. That's on assignment. Yeah. That's what she call being on assignment.
She is the Overdrive insider on assignment.
Yeah. That's integrity. That's professionalism. That's journalism.
The way I threw it back to her in the studio.
That was great.
It was awesome.
I felt good about that little interview.
I think we're bringing it to our show.
Yeah, I think so.
If you have any human interest stories at the beginning of the show, we will look into it.
Although I can't imagine we're going to come across another one like this anytime soon.
This guy's got a weird look to him, too.
Sacramento, California. Full ski gear 6 days later. Goes off a slope in Lake Placid and shows up 6 days later in his gear in Sacramento.
I think if I told my girlfriend to end up in Sacramento, she would spend maybe 2 hours being thankful I was alive, and then it would end, and then she would say, I don't ever want to speak to you.
I think so, too. I hate to be a cynic, but I can't imagine talking my wife out of her thinking that I was up to no good. Like, I don't know how she would possibly ever believe me.
However you got to Sacramento, you're never allowed back in this house anyway, so I hope you enjoyed it.
Godspeed, I'm so happy you're alive. Now get the hell out.
Yeah, no, your garbage is on the front lawn.
All right, Bob McKenzie will be in studio. Alex Goff, Canadian Olympian, and an update on the Tinder numbers in South Korea.
They're blowing up Tinder. They're going to break Tinder.
They're going to break Tinder. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.